Our guest today has spent 20 plus years working in tech across companies big and small. During the span of his career, Dr. Rainer Kraft has held down roles like senior software engineer, director of engineering, assistant professor, VP of engineering, and chief technology officer. Along his journey, he's earned his PhD in computer science from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and he's also garnered the title of Master Inventor due to his prolific work in inventing new technologies. Having filed more than 120 patent applications over his career while working at the likes of IBM and Yahoo. In 2003, MIT Technology Review named him one of the top 100 innovators under 30. In 2016, Dr. Kraft left Silicon Valley for his native home in Germany to help scale the fast-growing fashion startup Zalando. These days, Dr. Kraft is based in Berlin, Germany, where he runs an executive coaching business called The Mindful Leader, focusing on helping technical leaders deepen their skills and scale their organizations. Be sure to stay tuned as we check in with Master Inventor and CTO churn coach, Dr. Rainer Kraft.
You're listening to the Developmentor podcast, hosted by Grant Ingersoll. We have one goal on the show, to help you build a successful career in tech, no matter where you're from or where you're going. We do this by showcasing interesting people working across a variety of roles in tech and deep dive into their why. If you want to learn more, please visit our website at developmentor.com or follow us on Twitter at @developmentor.
Rainer, great to have you on the show. Welcome to Developmentor.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And I know, you know, so we're recording this in October. I know you're entering the doom and gloom months of the year in Berlin, but I trust you are doing well.
It's getting more grayish, a little bit more rain. And I think at some point, winter is coming up here and less and less sun, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I just had another guest on from Berlin the other day, and we were, lamenting the gray as well. But of course, in contrast, Berlin in say May and June and July is just absolutely amazing. I'm sure you won't argue with that side of it.
No, summer is great. I mean, summertime here, spring, also parts of fall. It's always the winter months or the late fall months when it gets a little bit grayish. Yeah, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, now, you're one of the few guests I've had the good fortune of meeting in person. I believe, we were talking offline here. 2017 or so, I want to say we met at Berlin Buzzwords. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was 2017.
I think that was when you were at Zalando and working pretty deeply in search. And I was there, giving a talk on search. And I think we have a mutual friend in Eric Bowman as well. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, there we go. Well, so let's dive in here, Rainer, because I'd really love to start off with, what inspired you to get into tech? And perhaps, what other options were you considering back in the day, as they say, when you were headed off to university?
So, for me, this was in the mid-90s. And when reflecting, I think I was always more like a tech guy. I liked in these early days, I remember when I was 15 or so, I bought my first mini computer. It was a Commodore VC20 and later on C64. So those actually familiar in these times with these first microcomputers or in general computers coming out, they may relate to this. But nevertheless, I like this idea of bringing ideas into some form that can actually be executed by a machine. And I got really fascinated with programming. And so at a later point, many, many years later, obviously, then computers came out, personal computers. And then in the early to mid-90s, this is when I then actually studied computer science here back in Germany. And that was actually the decision why I wanted to go into computer science, so just go even deeper into this. There's a big difference in terms of just doing a little bit of hacking or programming, right? But actually understanding much more about it, about algorithms, right? And about architecture of machines and so on. And that got me fascinated and then started my technical career, basically.
Like all around after you get your degree there in Germany, I mean, I believe this is when you came to the U.S. as well and pursued a graduate degree while working. Tell me a little bit more about that decision to come to the U.S. and go deeper into computer science while also working.
At that point here in Germany, I did a few internships at IBM. And to be honest, the topics that I was working on in these internships, they were kind of boring. It was mostly about mainframe computing. Yeah, I just felt like it's not up to date. The internet was just coming up and a lot of new technologies emerging. And I felt this is not where the action is. It's not here in Germany or in any part of Germany. It's actually in the Silicon Valley. And so I now thought about it. Wouldn't it be great to actually go there where the action is, and how do I do it? And that was not a easy or a straightforward process. It was kind of complicated. And it was a process that took me almost a year or more to gradually build up some connections and then figure out a strategy on how I can actually go to the Silicon Valley and start doing some stuff there. There's also all kind of legal requirements. If you're a German citizen and you want to basically work in a foreign country, right, then you basically enter as a visitor. There is visas, there's all those things that you have to figure out. And if you don't know anyone there at this point, it's actually like a little adventure the way it turned out to be. So there was struggle, there was some hardship, there was all those things that you could imagine to get basically to do this transition. But the vision for me was that once I actually arrived there, first time in San Jose, and I know the sunshine, these were the first impressions. But then when driving by at some companies, like at this point Netscape, or Apple, to name a few, right? I mean, this was when I said, oh, wow, this is really cool, right? I actually did it. I arrived. And then from there, I had a start. It wasn't all that easy at the beginning, but it was something to build up upon. And it was a long ride there and a lot of fun, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of pre, you know, for our listeners, pre-LinkedIn. And, you know, sure, the early web, you could email people and all that. But was there anything particular that stood out as, you know, you mentioned developing a strategy and connections. Is there anything particular that our listeners might take away that might still be actionable today as to how you approached solving that problem?
I think it's all about personal connections. And as you said, this was... email, sure, there was some email, but how do you know what people write whom to email and what are their email addresses? There was not something like a LinkedIn or like social networks or any of that stuff. And so it's all about connection, building up connections, and getting to know people and then hopping from one connection to the next connection until you eventually, hopefully, reach someone who can help, assist a little bit. And in this case, for me, the important thing was to find someone there who could basically give me a job in the computer industry, and so that I had something to get started, because that was the requirement with visas and with all those other things that you can actually get going, basically.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly from your profile, you ended up at IBM, you know, so you had done these internships in Germany for IBM, and then you ended up in research at IBM. Was that something you had thought about going in, like, hey, I want to be a research engineer or do research work? Or was it the job was available?
No, it was actually when I mentioned earlier building up connections. I had worked here in Frankfurt. From Frankfurt in IBM, I learned that there is a division in Mainz, which is another town a little bit to the west of Frankfurt. And there IBM had a division. And so I moved there, did another internship there, and got to know someone there, and they had a department in San Jose. They're working on storage systems. So it's not something exciting for me at the beginning. But nevertheless, it was computers, it was technology. And the connection they had with them back at San Jose was kind of loose connection. And they said, well, if you really want to, you can go there, but we won't be able to pay you for this. So you have to pay for the trip, for the expenses, for everything that happens. But we'll help you to at least give you the contacts and try to help you so that you can actually go there and see what happens. And that's what I did. And so I started out with IBM storage systems in San Jose, Cuttle Road, at that point. And from there, I knew a person who had also worked in Mainz before. He was a student there as well. At that point, however, he already moved to the IBM Research Lab, which was in Almaden, which is very nicely located on some hill in the countryside. So you won't see it from the valley. But if you drive there, it's really scenic, embedded in all the, into the nature, impressive building. I remember the first time. And he basically called me while I was in San Jose at the beginning and said, you know what, I worked at in this particular division where you are currently as well for some time, but it's actually kind of boring here at research. It's much more fun. And he invited me to come. And that's when I was the first time in a research lab, right? And he showed me around. I met a few people. And this was clicking right away, right? It was exactly what I was looking for in terms of the interests and the curiosity and like to invent stuff, to tinker with things, to experiment. This was the perfect environment, right? But on the other hand, it wasn't that easy just to get a job there because getting into this prestigious research lab from IBM is a whole nother story, right? Because I remember these days, there were hundreds of resumes they had on the piled up with like top students from the, from all those universities, MIT, Stanford, with top GPAs and everything, right? They were all piling up there. So it was not something where you can just show up and say, here I am, let me get working, right? This was a challenge basically.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I know, you know, especially back then, as much of the startup culture in the Valley, of course, there was quite a bit of it. But, you know, IBM was still a pretty big draw, and research has always been a big draw, especially if you're, you want to work on those kinds of early stage parts of technology. Well, so, so you landed there, and then at the same time, I believe you went part-time to UC Santa Cruz, as they call it, and you got your PhD. And, you know, one of the questions we often think about in our careers, especially if you're more research or academically inclined, is, should I go get a PhD, right? It's often a tough question to figure out. How did you approach the decision of getting a PhD?
I eventually got into the research lab. There were also some hurdles there. I joined as a research engineer. Yeah, I really like to work on research problems. And when looking around in this environment, there were the research scientists, right? There were lots of researchers around me, and most of the researchers at the end of the day, not necessarily the engineers, but most of the scientists, the PhD was standard, basically. And it was clear because the PhD prepares you to do research. So it's like something that if you want to go deeper in this career, it's definitely, I would say it's a requirement. It just gives you the tools and the experience that you need to build up, to set you up to be successful in this field, right? So if you're interested in this particular research environment, I think it can't hurt to have a PhD. It's probably a necessity to actually have it, to actually get in. Otherwise, you could still work as a research engineer, right? So more on the practical engineering side. For that, a PhD is not necessary at all. The decision was more about, do I want to go deeper or do I basically want to focus just more on the engineering part? And that led me onto this way then.
Well, and so as I understand it too, right, you're working full time and doing a PhD. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the, someone has to pay the bills, right? I mean, I basically came here to this, I came to the US with a box with a few personal belongings. That's it. family is all in Germany. And so I was pretty much on my own at that point. So it was my wife, at this point, girlfriend, and myself. We basically did the move. And in order to support us, right, there has to be some income. So it wasn't an option to becoming like a full-time student and then like a grad student there, work on toward a PhD program. It was always then the case, okay, I have to work. And then on top of this, I have to figure out how can I get a PhD? And people at that point around me, they discouraged me and said it's usually very hard or it's practically impossible to do it. But I didn't care anyway. I thought just let's do it and see how it goes. And that's how I got started.
Yeah, because that's pretty amazing. I mean, like, you know, I did my master's part-time. My work paid for it at the time. And, you know, one class a semester while working full-time is pretty doable. But then, you know, like taking on something like a thesis where you actually have to do really deep, you know, research and work, that seems darn near impossible to do both full-time work and write a thesis. So props to you for doing that. So you get your PhD and then, you know, you're at IBM for a while, you go to Yahoo. I'm curious, how were you thinking about your career in those early years? You know, it sounds like you had some aspirations around being a research scientist. Was there a particular plan in place at this point or more just, hey, I'm going to go with the flow as some folks do?
I spent a few years at IBM Research and went also there through different departments, different projects. And what really interested me was the whole area of web search. And we were actually doing search-related topics at that point at IBM Almaden. That was fun, and I learned a lot for sure. But again, where's the action when it comes to search? There was Yahoo. And then maybe a few years earlier, also in parallel, Google was just emerging. At that point, a very small company, and there were a few other search companies. Yahoo then acquired a few of them, like Inktomi. And I figured the action in the search market is at that point not at IBM, but it's actually in the search companies. And a friend of mine, also a mentor, he worked also at IBM Almaden at that point. His name is Chi Lu. He moved already to Yahoo and was building up some search topics there. And yeah, at some point, I think at the end, I think he convinced me that this is a much better place when you actually want to focus on those topics and make some impact. So that's why eventually I decided to move to Yahoo. But it took some time, so I hesitated a little bit. I could have joined even earlier, but I was working on my PhD on the side, and you mentioned it before, right? I started at Stanford taking classes there since IBM, they had a nice collaboration with Stanford. So I took classes there towards my master's, then switched to Santa Cruz. I could transfer the credits over. But I knew that as long as I stay with IBM as well, I'm relatively on track to actually complete my PhD. But I also knew if I join, at that point Yahoo was a startup, right? If I join a startup, the chances for getting my PhD done aren't that high, right? Because then you get sucked into a lot of work that leaves you practically no room doing something else. So my thinking was, let's first finish my PhD and then switch from IBM to Yahoo. But the timing was so that at the end of the day, I switched a little bit earlier. I just figured at that point, now's the right timing. But I still then had to continue at Yahoo to continue on my PhD for probably another year or so. But it worked out, right? But this gives a little bit motivation why I switched to Yahoo, and the aspiration there was mostly around, again, being in the center of the action of my focus topic.
It sounds similar to me, is like search emerged for you in this time. And that's very similar to my career, about the same time too, of like, hey, you find this home in this area and then you start to center your career around it. Well, so, you know, you've been at this game now for 20 plus years, Reiner. I'd love for you to, you know, kind of take us forward through some of the key inflection points that have led you to where you are now, right? So kind of hit the highlights and the framework, the things that happened that, you know, really had a big impact on the rest of your career coming forward to now.
I think I spent most of the time afterwards at Yahoo from starting 2004. And within Yahoo, I worked on a variety of different projects, different departments, mostly within their search division, which was growing really rapidly. I think the major milestone there was first on one side finishing my PhD. That was a thing that I actually was able to finish it, so I was happy about it. And I said, oh, great, so what do I do now? And then in parallel, I became a tech lead. At that point, a small team, and I basically experimented with leadership compared to being an individual contributor, which I had been the years before. And so that was a major decision to make this change from individual contributor to leader, which I think it was probably 2005 or so roughly when I transferred into this new role. And since then, actually, I experimented with leadership. And I think the insight there is the motivation first was, it's cool because now I can actually generate more impact. It's not just myself. It's actually like a team. Or later on, multiple teams or organizations that I'm leading. So I can actually multiply or increase the impact by just having more people working on the same thing and giving them direction, inspiration towards a vision. That for me was a big thing where I said, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
Tell me a little bit more about that transition, because this is often one of the big questions I think engineers, and let's face it, everybody faces, is should I go into management or not? You mentioned, you know, you experimented a little bit there. Tell me more about how you arrived at, yes, I'm finally going to make this change into management.
I had luck of having actually a great manager while being at Yahoo, and he told me this management thing, if you want to really try it, give it a try. And he encouraged me to try it out for, I don't know, maybe 9 months. He said, you can always switch back to becoming an individual contributor if I don't like it. It was a good way to experiment with it, actually figure out whether it makes sense by doing it. And then only after that, maybe after 9 months or a year, I actually committed and said, yeah, this is it. Let's do it. So that was helpful, basically.
Do you recall anything specific that stood out from that time of like, hey, you know, you mentioned the impact thing. That's a common theme I hear. Was there anything else that stood out of like, yeah, this is really for me? Because it's, you know, especially somebody who's doing research, that's a pretty big shift in mindset.
I mean, I still continued working on these researching topics. I still filed patents. I was working on inventions. I was working on a lot of product features and all this stuff. I mean, I usually filled in many roles, right? In terms of, I was still doing programming, so product related, product management. I worked actually in several roles while being a tech lead. But eventually, the leadership part was gaining more and more momentum and more focus. And then, if team sizes are increasing, at the end of the day, the leadership work, in quotes, becomes also more. That means you can do less and less other things, which was not happening overnight. So I was more gradually gravitating toward it.
I think that's often the case, right? Is like we just start to dabble and then it starts to take hold more and more. So you're growing into leadership at Yahoo. I think you were there something like 10 or 11 years and brings us up to 2016. And I imagine that another big inflection point for you is deciding to actually go back home, right? To go back to Germany. Walk us through like that decision and, you know, why 2016? Why go home?
So, I mean, we liked it there in the Bay Area, in the Silicon Valley. In general, California is a great place to be still. But the work environment was getting more and more stressful. That was one thing. And it was more and more people moving into the Bay Area. It got more and more crowded. I was commuting, and my commutes from the south of San Jose, actually Gilroy, for those of you who know, it's a small town in the southern part of San Jose, about 20 miles. It's where the garlic festival is.
I was going to say, the famous Gilroy garlic festival.
Exactly. And so the commute is getting worse because more and more people got onto the road and sitting in traffic, and I felt less balanced, right? And I was also working part-time during some of the years as an adjunct professor there in Santa Cruz. At the end of the day, it was just too much, right? Where there was no work-life balance anymore. The pace was fast, and I figured it's not going to be sustainable. But maybe it was 2014 or something, I was close to some form of a burnout, not completely, but getting there. I felt energy is going down, energy levels is going down, my health was deteriorating at this point. And this is when I discovered mindfulness. I took at this point it was called MBSR, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction class, that was offered at Yahoo. And it felt very good in a sense of, having more clarity, slowing things down a little bit, reflecting. And stress levels at that point were also decreasing. And it made me more open to new things, new experiences. And I thought definitely it was time to move on, do something new. But I didn't know what it was because, let's say I would have switched to, another big company, I don't know, like Google, Facebook. It would just be another big company there. I was looking again more for this little bit more adventure. Startup, of course, would also be a thing, but taking the risk there, because I didn't have a lot of other support systems in place in the Bay Area, I felt, and with a family at this point, with two boys, I felt probably the risk within Silicon Valley doing one of those things, which could be a natural choice, is probably not the best timing and the right context to do it. But then in parallel, an opportunity came up in Berlin, right? So which was brought to me, somehow magically appeared, right? It was really I don't know, what's the word for this, serendipity because I was visiting there was some event organized and some German delegation was showing up. They wanted to learn a little bit about the Silicon Valley. And I remember in this evening, a friend of mine had invited me to, if I could come and maybe if these guys have a few questions, I could probably provide some guidance. And then I was there at this event in Palo Alto. It was Berlin, was all over the place, right? There were like posters of Berlin. And so everything was showing like, oh, Berlin, right? And then a few weeks later, a recruiter who was also at this event, he called me and told me about some opportunity actually in Berlin, right, from a company called Zalando, which I never heard of, to be honest. But it was at that point already the largest e-commerce fashion company here in Europe. My parents definitely knew it. All my friends knew it. But I, since I was mostly in California, so I wasn't aware. But this is when it came up, right? And when I learned more about the opportunity, the scope of the position, really building up search, personalization. So all those things that I had gained this experience in the past years, and doing it in a major, in a big way. And I said, oh, wow, this is really a nice conclusion to what I'm doing here. And it also has this adventure flavor to it because it was in a different country and continent, right? So I thought, this is kind of cool. It was not in that sense going home because I originally from the Frankfurt area. Berlin is completely new to me at this point. It had all these, it had a right mix. But still was at that point a major decision because it was not just me, but actually changing the roots of the family, right, with which were grown up, born in the US. That was a major decision.
Yeah, for sure. I would imagine, you know, since they were born in the U.S., that's quite the transition for your family as well. You know, they often say if you move and you change jobs all at the same time, that can be quite stressful. So you move, you change jobs. You're also taking on a much bigger role, as I understand, too, right? In that it's VP of engineering. You know, tell me a little bit more then about that time at Zalando. And, you know, you're basically on a rocket ship at this point, right? Because this is a really successful startup in the time you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. When I arrived here and then got to know the company, the team, it already was a big engineering team. There were 1,300 engineers, roughly. There was one VP of engineering. You mentioned him before, Eric Bowman, right? And then I joined, that's it, right? So this large team, right? And for me, but my focus areas were on search, personalization. These were relatively small teams. And given my background, I was immediately then focusing more on data science, data-related topics, organizing research, because that's what really my strengths was as well, combining research and with engineering. My scope then was much smaller, right? So, but it grew very fast within a short amount of time. Within 2 years or so, the size of my organization had been grown to close to 400 people, distributed in Berlin, plus also Dublin, and also Helsinki. It was like, as you said, like a rocket ship, right? And the speed was very, very fast.
What are some of the key lessons you learned kind of in these later years as a manager? So you mentioned the mindfulness, and I want to get to your coaching business here in a minute. But, you know, talk me through some of these key lessons now that you're a leader, you've kind of been through it a few times. You know, what stands out for you in terms of creating teams, creating a great engineering culture?
These are exactly the challenges, is creating great teams, creating impactful, flourishing organizations. It's all about communication, collaboration, and that is the main objective, but also the main struggle of a leader is to make this work, right? And I found it much more interesting at that point already compared to technology. So I really shifted in terms of mindset what was more important. Because what I could see over the past 10, 20 years is that whatever technology problems were there, somehow we could solve them. It was just a matter of getting the right people, good engineers, researchers, and so on, onto a hard technical problem, and we would solve it, right? So it was nothing there that was completely unsolvable. There was always something that you can make it work. The struggle was more about how do you get people to work together, to collaborate, and to actually build great things, right? It was this setting up this environment, and this is all what leadership is about. And so I realized that these challenges are much harder because they're not binary as when you write code, right? It's more figuring out how to do this, which is at the end, what I mentioned earlier, communication and collaboration, right? How do you make that work? There is no straight line to this or like a blueprint or recipe that you can just follow. It's basically creativity that you can apply to figure out solutions, iterate, see how it works, but also measure how well you're doing, right? So all these principles that really excited me to go deeper in this whole topic of leadership, basically.
And that's probably a great segue then into, you know, so you're at Zalando. I think you did a CTO role at a startup, and then you launched the Mindful Leader. Tell us more about the Mindful Leader, and more importantly, like why you started it and how you prepared to go out on your own.
At the end of the day, after Zalando and during this time, I actually had experimented a lot with different leadership approaches, methodologies. I coined this term, I call it mindful leadership at that point, and I experimented with it in terms of how could it work, what are some like pros and cons, how can you set it up, what does it mean? Maybe 3-4 years ago, I started my blog, themindfulleader.net, and there I wrote about these topics. Like one of the first things I developed was the 12 mindful leadership principles, because if you give principles, leaders can look at them, they can review them, and they can use it as guidance, and because everyone can figure out their own way on how they want to do leadership, but it gives them some ideas. And this got me into this mindful leadership and experimentation. As you mentioned, last year I also worked on building up a startup here in Berlin, FinTech, which was much smaller. Tech team was about 50 people there. But I wanted to explore the startup environment, how different it is from a big company, what are things that they have in common, and how can you apply these leadership things in a smaller context. And once I had completed this, I felt at this point I had enough experience built up. And then I thought about, so well, how, what would be the next thing, right? Could I could still do more, maybe build up more startups. I could go back in some other larger contexts and larger companies. But I thought it's now on time to do something on my own and also figure out how can I help other leaders to basically go through these challenges, go through technical challenges, but mostly also leadership challenges, like, let's say, scaling of organizations, right? Because I had been through all those things in all different contexts in the past 15 years. So I felt it's now a good time to also give back on one side, but in other sense also improve the workplace, right? Because for me, the most critical thing was looking back in the Silicon Valley, I've seen really toxic work environments where it was not fun to work at. At some point at Yahoo, I've seen environments there. I said, oh my goodness, what's going on? And it was mostly the leaders who caused this toxicity, right? It was the leaders with poor decisions, big egos, right? And a lot of political battles and among power turf, right? On just figuring out how to basically increase their influence, right? And at the end of the day, the workplace became not a fun place anymore, but it basically became a dreadful place to be, right? And it was the responsibility of the leaders to do this, right? They created it, but I also figured they can create different type of workplaces, like purposeful workplaces, workplaces where people are happy, where they can thrive, where innovation can flourish, right? Because I knew how to do innovation, but usually innovation happened if the environment was good to support it. And so I figured with all those things learned, let's actually help other leaders that they can do it in this way, actually, yeah, have impact on other workplaces and make the whole environment in terms of workplaces that related to tech, make them just better, more pleasant, right? And this way the impact is being generated.
Yeah, and we'll be sure to link up. Reiner, you've got this great blog post called the, let me just make sure here, the 12 Mindfulness Leadership Principles. Real quick for our listeners, what are one or two actionable things they could take today, this week, next week, to be more mindful in their work, especially as a leader?
Yeah, I mean, very simple things, because that was right exactly the question that I was thinking about in the past year. So how can you actually get in this and what is the best way to do it? And so I actually put together this training program, right, where I figured out a very systematic approach on how you can actually become a mindful leader, on how you can add more awareness to whatever you're doing. And I call this Mindful Tech Leadership Fundamentals. It's something you can do over 2 months, but the way it starts is relatively simple, right? It's just pretty much becoming a little bit more aware of your thoughts, of your mind, right? And the most amazing thing that I thought is a good way to look at this is that the research shows you that an average human generates per day about 40 to 50,000 thoughts per day, right? And so if you think about 40, 50,000 thoughts that you're generating, but also the study says that about 95 or even more percent are all useless. They're garbage. And so why are they garbage? Well, because they are. It's about rehashing past events. It's about thinking about what you should be doing in the next few hours, the next day, the future.
what to have for dinner.
Exactly. But then there's also worries about all kind of things that could happen. It's basically a lot of garbage that piles up and you're generating it and you have no control over it because the mind pretty much operates on its own, right? If it's not trained. And so the big insight is if the mind is not trained, you're accumulating this large pile of garbage every day. And the second interesting thing is that the brain itself only represents like maybe 2%, 3% of your body weight, but it uses about 20% of your energy all the time. It's always on, like 24 hours, right? So it uses all this energy, and then this energy is used to produce all this garbage, right? So for me, the thinking was, oh my goodness, right? And I wanted to actually verify, is this the case that I'm producing this amount of garbage or this, right? And so that's how my training started, is when you actually start, we start, for instance, by measuring what are your number of thoughts per day. Let's estimate this, right? We can count them by doing a little exercise of self-reflection where you sit still, quiet for 3 minutes. You set an intention to not have any thoughts. And then you have maybe pen and paper, close your eyes, right? And every time a thought appears, you check it, right? And this way you can actually measure or approximate the number of thoughts in 3 minutes divided by three. Now you have thoughts per minute. And if you do a sampling across the day, like midday, evening, you have more data points, and then you can basically approximate how many are there per day, right? And this way, if you do this for a few weeks, once or twice a week, you can actually see what your thought activity is. And the idea in general with the training is, with the mindfulness training, is that once you start to train your mind, it becomes calmer, and you can do simple mindfulness exercises. So what you were asking, how can you start? Well, you could do very simple things by, let's say, brushing your teeth mindfully, right? Usually when you brush teeth, it goes very fast, right? So you go through, and you're in 20 seconds or so, 30 seconds, you're done. But remember, the dentist, usually they told you or me, right, take 2 minutes for this. But usually it's not 2 minutes. But if you actually do little things like this mindfully, that means you pay full attention to it. Every teeth, you basically, you feel the tooth, right, and you feel the brush as it goes over the gum, right, and you pay full attention to it. And then actually you take your time, because now you're fully immersed in the present moment, and you do this, and then you actually, the 2 minutes, they will pass, and then you have actually the first time you brushed your teeth properly, right? In this sense, you didn't use for this exercise really a lot of extra time. In fact, most of the time, if you do these things that you already do, but you do them fully aware, right? Like eating, no? Eat your dinner, eat your lunch, take a shower, do it mindfully, right? So you're doing these things with more awareness. It doesn't eat up extra time, but it increases the muscle of the mind. That's how I call it, right? And this is how it starts. And then you continue, and the goal is to get this big chunk of thoughts, like these 40, 50,000, right? Basically, you get it gradually down over time so that the brain is using less energy on those to produce them in the first place. And then you can actually use this energy for good stuff, right? For solving hard problems, for creativity, and for a lot of useful things. That is, in general, this idea. It's quite a fascinating topic because, as you've already heard, this is also science aspects in there, like measuring thoughts and KPIs around how to make progress. So you can see it's basically redirecting my scientific interests just into a different field, basically.
That's fantastic. Well, and you get cleaner teeth out of it too. So it's a win across the board. I love it. Bringing this home here, Reiner, if you put on your mentoring hat, if you reflect back on this career, or perhaps you just think about what do you wish, 18-year-old Reiner knew at the time, what's your best career advice for somebody out there who wants to go down maybe this research path or go down this manager path? What would you tell that person?
I think I would encourage this person to learn a little bit more about mindfulness first. There's a few simple courses that you can do. There's yoga, some meditation, So not too complicated, not too much investment, but the time spent in this helps to really increase your level of self-reflection and self-awareness. And particularly in these younger years, I think it can be extremely helpful. The more you have of this capability, it just helps you to make better decisions or higher quality decisions. For me, maybe looking back, things the way they worked out and everything, all good. So I wouldn't want to have it any other way. I think it was all perfect. That's why I'm sitting here now. This is all necessary for me to arrive at this current moment. But having these capabilities build up and just going to college and absorbing knowledge and theory without building out this self-reflection and self-awareness can lead you to a path that is just suboptimal, right? And so I think that's something I would give as advice after high school. Maybe take a year off, something like this, right? And within this year, yeah, do explore, travel, whatever it is. But take some time to actually learn some of these techniques, mindfulness techniques, a little bit of yoga, meditation, breathing, a few of these things to increase your self-reflection. Because then when you then decide, oh, what is it that I actually wanted to do? It just gives you a deeper perspective to hopefully then make better quality decisions when it comes to your next step.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And for our listeners, we'll link up some references here and resources around mindfulness and Reiner's blog as well. Reiner, it's been amazing to have you on the show here. I love the themes throughout here of taking an intentional approach to your career and all the different ways you've done that. Final question for you, where can our listeners best engage with you and your content?
I'm definitely available on LinkedIn. It always in the past 10, 20 years, LinkedIn was a good choice to network, to communicate. It's so definitely encourage you if you're interested in some of these ideas, ping me there. And of course, also on my blog, if you find my blog useful or helpful, you can ping me there as well.
Yeah, and that's the mindfulleader.net. And we'll be sure to link that up as well as Reiner's LinkedIn profile. Reiner, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us and share your story with our listeners.
Thanks, Ben. It was great. Hopefully it was helpful.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Developmentor podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Even better, please leave us a review. If you want to hear older episodes, leave feedback, or sign up to be a guest, please visit us at developmentor.com. If you'd like to support the show, there are three ways you can help out. 1, make a donation via Patreon. 2, if you're a software engineer looking for your next gig and wanting to practice interviewing, use our referral link to the interviewing.io platform. And 3, buy your next tech book from Manning Publications using our affiliate link. All of those links can be found at developmentor.com/support-us. That's SUPPORT-US, all one word. Most importantly, if you like this show, please tell your friends. Referrals are the lifeblood of any podcast. Finally, we here at Developmentor hope that each and every episode helps you move one step closer to finding your path.